We resume our study in Genesis by picking it up at verse 16. Verse 16. We have in this chapter a picture of Abraham the intercessor. Abraham was a man of faith, and we tried to pick up along the way some very specific ways in which Abram demonstrated the life of faith. And one of those specific ways is the way of intercession. And in no way can the believer come closer to being like Christ than when the believer is interceding on behalf of others. So we will learn some lessons from Abraham as we see him as an intercessor. Let's begin at verse 15. I'll not read it through, but I think I'm going to ramble through the section. I violate all laws of homiletics, not hermeneutics, but homiletics, and I will ramble through this. I'm going to come back and take up the mark, the five marks of an effective intercessor, based on what we find out about Abraham here. But let's look at the passage. Let's see what is exactly taking place. Then the men rose up from there, and looked down toward Sodom. Abraham was walking with them to send them off. Maybe a map on the screen will help us to orient ourselves to where Abram is walking and where they're looking. You look down on the Sea of Galilee. We're looking from the top, of course, down to the Dead Sea. We have Jerusalem. Down about midway into the Dead Sea, out to the west, we have Hebron, where Abram is living. The cities of Sodom and Gomorrah are down here on the Vale of Chittim. And this vale is probably covered by the Salt Sea, by the Dead Sea at this time. The best that we can tell is that originally the Dead Sea was not nearly as extensive to the south as it is now. And at one time, this was quite a fertile area. It was quite a prosperous area. The distance is 18 miles down to the vicinity of the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah and the other areas, the cities in that area. And he walks with them out in that direction, and from the hills around Hebron, one can look and they can catch that vicinity on the horizon. That is what is described in verse 16. Now, of course, this company of three is God himself in the form of a theophany, and you have two angels. Abraham is recognized, the one as the Lord, in this special manifestation, and this is where they're going, toward Sodom. The Lord said, "Shall I hide from Sodom?" Or from Abraham, rather, what I'm about to do. Now, this is sort of a soliloquy. It is something that is said so that Abraham can hear, and so that Abraham will be stimulated to ask the question. And God is really setting the whole thing up so that Abraham can have the opportunity to act as an intercessor. The Lord said, "Shall I hide from Abraham what I am about to do? Since Abraham will surely become a great and mighty nation, and in him all the nations of the earth will be blessed. For I have chosen him." I might pause to point out a couple of things about this point of the narrative. That one is that Abraham is being selected by God for this point in time to learn a lesson as to how God deals with a nation. This is a part of Abraham's overall growth and maturity. And God is arranging the whole episode to bring Abraham along in his own intercessory ministry, as well as bring him along in understanding the ways of God in dealing with a nation. And you might pick up a very important point of application here. God creates circumstances, arranges circumstances in our life so that if we take advantage of these and use these and exploit them in the best sense, that they are occasions for rapid and instantaneous growth in some area in our life. And when we lack the spiritual perception to recognize that, we'll miss it. This is why it's important that we always are perceptive when it comes to our circumstances to see what special lessons God would want to be teaching us in that time. I hope you can pick up on this point and apply it. I'll give you some ways to apply it when we come to the mark of an effective intercessor. There's a second fact that you ought to notice here, and it's a grammatical point that fits in with some other things that I have been teaching you, and I want you to see it. It is the word chosen in verse 19. I simply want to show you that the word to know does not always mean cognition or awareness. The verb that is used here, it looks like this in the Hebrew. It is yavah. And yavah is translated chosen. But what does yavah mean? Transliterated, Y-A-V-A-H. Y-A. Yabba. It's the verb for know, to know. But it is not always translated to know because that is not always its meaning in the sense of being aware of fact. The word is used here, properly translated, I have chosen him. I have known him. I say that so that we will understand the concept of foreknowledge in other passages. That foreknowledge does not, just by the very word itself, mean after or pre-knowledge of fact. That here it is saying that when God knew someone, it means to choose them. You keep that in mind, that goes into the doctrine of divine decrees, election, and what I've been teaching you in Romans 9. Well, I have chosen him, Yada, to know, I have known him, in order that he may command his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing righteousness and justice, in order that the Lord may bring upon Abraham what he has spoken about him. To teach Abraham as to, he's going to be, what's his name? Father of nations. And Abraham is going to be taught a lesson in how God deals with nations, errant nations. And the Lord said, the outcry of Sodom and Gomorrah is indeed great. Their sin is exceedingly grave. I will go down now and see if they have done entirely according to its outcry, which has come to me. If not, I will know. Question. Why does God have to visit Sodom? Is God's omniscience not effective enough by mere definition to take into account all the facts? This is in the same vein as that statement with regard to the Tower of Babel. God said, I will go down and see what they're doing. Well, he knew what they were doing. But you must understand that the Bible, God did not write the Bible for himself. He wrote the Bible for us. And this is language to communicate his actions. It's language that helps us to get a handle on what God is doing. I think there are a couple of things that you need to keep in mind as to why God chooses to visit Sodom, when all that he needed to do was to act upon his omniscience. He knew what was going on by virtue of that. But here he's taken upon himself human form. This was part of the twofold purpose of visiting Abraham, to make a statement about Sarah, and then to go by way of Abraham down to the city. Question is, why did God take that kind of action? I want to suggest a couple of things. One is that God is omniscient and didn't need the information. That's the premise. But let's state it. God is omniscient and did not need the information. We're not free to question that premise unless you want to question the very character of God. Two, his visit was for man's benefit, not for his benefit. God was not seeking information for his benefit, but the visit was for man's benefit. How? In what way was it for man's benefit? To demonstrate that his decision to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah was fully justified and not arbitrary. You see the point that's made with this visit? That here is this visit, this surveillance, to underscore to all readers, to all who will ever know of this story, that God took special action. He went so far as to go down for our benefit and to see that he personally saw in human form what was going on. And so it is written, therefore, to underscore the fact that God is always just in his judgment, never arbitrary. Scripture always, always underscores the integrity of God. Never should it be questioned. Then the men turned away from there and went toward Sodom. The two angels go on their way, but the Lord remains, while Abraham was still standing before the Lord. And Abraham came near and said, now this coming near, the verb is quite interesting. The Hebrew verb is, it looks like this, it's na-gash, N-A-G-A-S-H, na-gash. This verb, on some occasions in the Old Testament, is to describe the act of coming to God in worship, an act of prostration, of drawing near, as in Exodus chapter 30 and verse 20, as in Isaiah 29 and verse 13. This verb translated here to come near does not simply imply taking a step closer, but it implies an act of worship. Abraham recognizing the Lord himself and what he is about to do, he submits himself in an act of worship as he is about to intercede. And he said, "Wilt thou indeed sweep away the righteous with the wicked?" Suppose, here he sets out now to undertake this exemplary act of intercession. He says, "Suppose there are 50 righteous within the city. Wilt thou indeed sweep it away and not spare the place for the sake of the 50 righteous who are in it?" Now look what Abraham's concern is. His major concern in intercessory prayer. I'll come back to it in a minute, if you want to mark it. It's at the end of verse 25. "Far be it from thee to do such a thing, to slay the righteous with the wicked, so that the righteous and the wicked are treated alike. Far be it from thee, shall not the judge of all the earth deal justly. Abraham is concerned about what in this whole episode? It's the key to his intercessory prayer. What is the major concern of Abraham in his prayer? The integrity, the honor of God. The honor of God. That God be glorified in what he's about to do. That this judgment will appear to all men who hear it, who see it, who know about it. That God was acting consistently with his own character. That it not diminish the Lord's reputation in the least. That's what his concern is. What is God? How can God get the greatest glory out of this situation? Now, in Abraham's way of thinking, it involves, if there's only one way, that God would spare the city by sparing the people. Or should we say, maybe reverse it, that he would spare the righteous by sparing the city. That was the only way he could think. But he prayed for God's glory. Well, you got to see, how did God do it? Abraham was not putting God in a corner. He was not acting presumptuously and saying, "Well, you must spare the city to save these people." God brought glory to himself. How? He destroyed the city but brought the people out. Now, that's a crucial fact in any prayer, and particularly here in intercessory prayer. The Lord said, "If I find in Sodom 50 righteous within the city, then I will spare the whole place in their account, on their account." Notice the humility of Abraham. I'm going to skip down to the narrative and just point out the progression of the sequence in Numbers that he suggests. Abraham's humility, although I am but dust and ashes. Then he comes down to 45. He's probably thinking more about the condition there as he goes along. From 45 to 40, from 40 to 30, from 30 to 20, finally down to verse 32. "O may the Lord not be angry, I shall speak only this once. Suppose 10 are found there." And he said, "I will not destroy it on account of the 10. And as soon as he had finished speaking to Abraham, the Lord departed, and Abraham returned to his place. 5 marks of an effective intercessory ministry. What is an intercessory ministry? To intercede is simply to go to the Lord, and we're talking in the context of prayer. To intercede is to go to the Lord on behalf of somebody else. You see, you distinguish between different elements of prayer. There is praise or thanksgiving. There is confession. There is petition. There is intercession. So we're going to specialize on that tonight. The intercessor is the one who is praying on behalf of other people. Now let's take these 5 marks of an effective intercessor. Number 1, the effective intercessor in prayer is one who is aware of God's plan. Verses 17 through 21. He is aware of God's plan. By being aware of the plan, he is like Abraham. And God made Abraham aware of what he was going to do with Sodom and Gomorrah. Abraham is noted as a friend of God, Isaiah 41:8. The intimate relationship between Abraham and God was the basis for Abraham's insight as to what was going on. Do you see that? God chose to give Abraham insight into what he was going to do because of the close relationship that Abraham had with God. He was a friend of God. Here's my point. That an effective intercessory ministry is directly related to your own spiritual perception, to the degree of your maturity. The more mature you are, the more intimate your relationship with the Lord, the more sensitive you are going to be to the need for intercessory prayer. The more aware you will be of the conflict in which we're all engaged. That we're not in a warfare that is the flesh and blood, against flesh and blood, but it's against principalities and powers. That we're not wrestling against carnal opposition. It is not physical. It is something deeper than that. And the perceptive Christian recognizes this. He has to focus the plan of God in focus, and this stimulates his intercessory prayer ministry. That's what Abraham gives to us here. We realize the lostness that would ultimately come, or that they experience in the city. And then he realized that God was teaching Abraham something of the things that he was to learn, the nature of his holiness, human depravity, all of these things Abraham had learned and was learning. Secondly, he was alert to the needs of those around him. He was alert to the needs of those around him. He was concerned about the righteous of Sodom and Gomorrah. Those are the ones for whom he prayed. He is not praying for Sodom and Gomorrah directly. That isn't a license to pray down an imprecatory prayer necessarily. That is praying down judgment upon your enemy. But it is a license to take note of special areas of need among the righteous. So he was alert to the needs of those around him. Thirdly, he appealed to God's character. Abraham appealed to God's character. Verse 25. Now you do not engage in this kind of thing in prayer unless you know something of God's character. He is appealing to God on the basis of his knowledge of who God was, and was seeking to ask God to act consistently, to bring glory to himself. God, you cannot act inconsistently with yourself. Now, that's not the prayer of the ill-taught person. That's the prayer of a perceptive Christian. Moses prayed like that. Now, he's not bossing God around, but he is taking the character of God and is actively asking, he's asking God to work in consistency with his character. He appealed to God's character. He realized how awesome the judgment of God was. He knew that this would mean the end of the life of Lot and his family if God judged Sodom and Gomorrah. He was not haggling with God here. That is not intercession. He was not bargaining with God. Rather, he was familiar with the situation to some extent, but not as familiar as he should have been. He was exploring in his prayer what he was doing. And you know, prayer, there is a place for that in prayer, where you explore along. You're praying along, and then you clarify your own prayer goals as you pray. That's what Abraham is doing. Also, he knew that God would act in keeping with his holy nature. And that is why he wants God to deliver righteous Lot and his family. But he wanted God to be honored, and that is crucial. This is to be the motive in all prayer, the glory of the Lord. And I think that our prayer, whether it's confession, or whether it's praise, or whether it's petition, or intercession, that prayer will always be effective if we keep that motive in mind. Not the motive to consume it to our own lust, but the motive of how can God be glorified in this matter for which I am praying. That will help to clarify our goals in prayer. How can the Lord get the greatest possible honor? And that keeps us from trying to put God in a corner and acting presumptuously, like God has to answer in this way. God has all these options, and he can answer in the way that would best glorify him. That is what Abraham wants. Why? What had Abraham been called from the Ur of the Chaldees to Canaan to do? He had been called to come and to bear the name of the Lord. He, in a very special way, was God's representative, and Abraham was very sensitive to this. Sure, he failed the Lord in this area, hasn't he, already? And he's brought reproach to the name of the Lord by the way he behaved down in Egypt. But here is Abram thinking about the importance of the testimony of Yahweh. And he wants that honor to be seen in this situation. And the fourth mark of an effective intercessor is that he acted in a manner consistent with biblical praise. He acted in a manner consistent with biblical praise. Now there are four features of his intercessory prayer then. One, we may make these four subpoints to this fourth principle. He acted in a manner consistent with biblical praise. One, he prayed specifically. I don't know how much more specific you can get from going to 50, to 45, to 40, to 30, to 20, to 10. That's going right after a specific number. Someone has said that generalities are the refuge of a weak mind. And that may very well be the case in much of praying, that it is a weakness and a flabbiness in prayer when we're not specific enough. And that could very well be one of the reasons why we get discouraged with our prayers, is that we just never really get specific enough, and we don't see any answers, because we really have asked so generally that I guess if you pray generally, you get general answers, at least in the perception of it. So we need to learn to pray specifically. He did. He is praying in precision. Secondly, he is praying persistently. He's persistent. He's exploring in his prayer. He's thinking in anticipation. He's earnest in his prayer. He prayed persistently. Thirdly, he prayed humbly. Verse 27, I am but dust and ashes. He was not presumptuous. One does not come to God and demand that God be such and such. God is not someone that we carry in a little box, that when we say the right words, he will come out and do what we want him to do. But God is sovereign, and we should beseech his glory in any situation. And we lay before him the matter and trust him to do what will bring him the greatest honor. And fourthly, he prayed with boldness. That is, he knew the character of God well enough to know that God must act in consistent fashion with that character. So he could say, well, now, Lord, I want you to do it justly. What will bring you the greatest honor in this to do this? Will you deliver these people? Well, he didn't deliver that. God did not deliver Lot and his family in the manner in which Abram had prayed, but he did deliver. And five, in the fifth mark of an effective intercessor, is that his intercession affected the deliverance of Lot and his family. His intercession affected the deliverance of Lot and his family. Verse 29 of chapter 19. Thus it came about, when God destroyed the cities of the valley, that God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow when he overthrew the cities in which Lot lived. He did what? God remembered Abraham. He remembered his intercession. This is an antinomy. This is an antinomy. God's plan is fixed. And God had this all planned, but yet Abraham's prayer affected a change within that. God decreed the end as well as the means to the end. So don't say, well, God would have delivered Lot even if Abraham hadn't prayed. You and I have no warrant to make such an assumption. God has decreed the means as well as the end. And he has decreed in his accessory prayer how? That it will bring about a genuine effect and change. You see, if you're not careful, you can get yourself into a deadly fatalism. And there is a kind of theology that's working its way around our country today that I think has brought some folks into that as a deadly kind of fatalism. And it is really tampering with the doctrine of divine sovereignty. And Abram believed in God's sovereignty, but he fears human responsibility, engaging in effective intercessory prayer. So Abram's prayer was answered indirectly, as I've already pointed out. Abram thought there were only two possibilities. One, you wipe out everybody. Two, you spare the city, and therefore spare Lot. But there was a third that Abram hadn't even thought about. And so that should be an encouragement in prayer. That is much as an answer to prayer as the one that Abram, the point that Abram asked. So we have to be perceptive on how we see God answering prayer, don't we? That God has other options, and he's worked in those ways. God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, but delivered the righteous, as we'll see in the next couple of weeks. So in this way, God's name was honored. God did justly. So God uses the prayers of fulfilling his purpose. Intercessory prayer takes us into a likeness of the Lord Jesus Christ like no other minister can. When we intercede. Now let's go a little more practical. Let's go to the practical theology department. And now that I've given you the motivation, you're always saying the preachers, well, you're always telling us what to do. Why don't you tell us how to do it? All right. Here's the how-to. Nine ways to build an intercessory prayer ministry. Nine ways to build an intercessory prayer ministry. How can we become more effective intercessors for one another? One, to become alert to those in need of prayer. to become alert to those in need of prayer. What happened when God, when Abraham realized there would be judgment brought on Sodom and Gomorrah? First thing, his nephew's family, their leader, they've got a need. Thanks, he prays. Spontaneous. We must begin with those closest to us. That's where we must begin. We would begin with our own family. In your own intercessory prayer, are you faithful in praying for your own family members? Your children? Your wife or husband? Listen, that is one of the most important things, wives, husbands, that you can do for one another, is to pray for one another. And that will give you a lot more insight into their needs when you are taking the time to pray for them and thinking about them. Do you pray for your husband or your wife? Are you praying specifically for your children? I don't believe you can begin an effective intercessory ministry that you've begun with your family. And then you widen the circle out. The next family would be your church family. How effective is your intercessory ministry among us? Our directory can serve as a guideline in that way. The directory can give you some help, and this can give you a general idea, but are you aware of the need that exists among different ones in the church family? Then you can widen it out to fellow members in the body of Christ. You have an example of being sensitive to needs in the church, by the way, in Matthew 19:19, and possible needs for church discipline. You can pray for people who may be heading in that direction. We must become alert to the existence of lost people and pray for them specifically. Are you praying for lost people by name? Not the general prayer, Lord, save the lost. But are there specific lost folks that you're praying for? Somebody that you work with? Somebody you live near? Somebody in your family? Those who wrong you, Matthew 5:44, points out in no uncertain terms that we are to pray for those who persecute us. Are you praying for your enemies? You ought to have one page, perhaps. I don't know if it would be full or not. I guess that would vary. But are you praying for those that you do not count in your inner circle of friends? Are you praying for those who persecute you? That's intercessory prayer. So, first point, building an intercessory prayer ministry, is that we become alert to those in need of prayer. Secondly, build the habit of prayer into your life.
Now, I suggest just a couple of things. We had a 13-hour study on the biblical doctrine of prayer back this year, and I went into some of these things in much greater detail. But I would say that the very minimal thing that you can do, or the most basic thing, is to set a time and start and have a special time in the day when you're praying. This is not taking anything away from spontaneity and praying at other times. But I think that if you have engaged in any kind of a prayer life through the years, you have to realize, and you've come to realize, that you must at least establish that minimum, that you have a time that you set aside, and that you are building this as a habit, so that it becomes as instinctive as for some who go after the cup of coffee in the morning. Is it as instinctive and as spontaneous to build this then at the beginning of the day? And then also take advantage of quiet moments that you may have if you happen to be waiting, and quiet moments may become an increasing premium in our way of life, but when they do come your way, count them as some great assets in your hands, and see if they use those quiet moments to bring some dividends. So build a habit of prayer into your life, and then of course into that, then you'll feed this alertness to the needs of others. The third feature or fact in building an intercessory prayer ministry is turn personal crises into occasions for intercession. Turn personal crises or a personal crisis into an occasion for intercession. There are a couple of three good examples of this. One that comes to me so clearly is John 17, where we have a profile of the Lord's intercessory ministry. When did he pray this prayer? He prayed this prayer in the shadow of the cross, the greatest agony that he had to face. And yet he engages himself in praying for others, for us. And by the way, notice in that intercessory prayer what our Lord prayed and desired above all else, the glory of the Lord. The glory of the Lord. So in the shadow of a crisis, I'm talking about your own personal crisis, turn that into the occasion of praying for others. Let me give you a couple of other examples. Philippians chapter 1, verse 9, which is just representative of all of the prayer passages in the prison epistles. Paul was in prison. Quiet moments. Paul was in prison, shut down from an active schedule. But this was taken and turned into an advantage for intercessory prayer. He prayed for the Colossians. He prayed for the Philippians. He prayed for Philemon. He prayed that God would do some very special things in those churches and the churches around Ephesus as well. Also, another example of this thing is in James 5, in verse 16, that the one who is sick and needs prayer takes the initiative to seek out intercessory prayer on their behalf. I'll come back to that principle a little later on. But turn personal crises into occasions for intercession. Now, here, let me add one other thing to that. I mean this. Your crisis can help you focus on a similar crisis that someone else may be having. Are you going through a financial crisis? Turn that into the occasion for praying for other people along that same line. Are you going through some physical crisis? Do you face an operation? Is there some sickness that you cannot, that you've gone to all these doctors and you cannot find any help? You cannot get a helpful diagnosis. Take that as the occasion to intercede for someone else that you know of that may be going through the very same thing. Allow this. Don't get turned in on yourself to the point where you lose this sensitivity to needs. That's the whole concept of intercessory prayer, alertness to needs. Four, anticipate crises in the lives of others, whether you're going through a crisis or not. Anticipate crises in the lives of others. Romans 15, verses 30 and 31. Paul comes right out and asks for the Romans, the Roman Christians, to pray in the light of some special needs that he has. He says, I urge you, brothers, by our Lord Jesus Christ and by the love of the Spirit, to join me in my struggle by praying to God for me. Pray that I may be rescued from the unbelievers in Judea. Now, he's giving them something specific, isn't he? And that my service in Jerusalem may be acceptable to the saints there. Then, by God's will, I can come to you with joy and together with you be refreshed. So, anticipate crises that others may have. For instance, marriage crisis. Are you praying for those who are going to get married or the newlyweds? That's intercession. Think back on some of the special needs that you had as a newlywed, some of the special problems that you had. There, take note of those who are getting married and pray for them in an intercessory way. Death. Do you know someone who is facing death, someone who's had a death in the family? Pray for them in the light of their special needs in that circumstance. Birth. Is someone just given birth to a child? To your knowledge, pray for that child. Pray for the future of that child, for the mother and the father, that they will give it the kind of leadership it needs. Do you know somebody who's moving? From time to time we have different ones among us, so they get transferred, they have to move, and they're not always moving to another city. They're moving just in the area from one place to the other. Intercessory ministry. And let me tell you, moving ranks right up there with death and a few other things. It can be quite a trauma. And they're going to be special need that you pray, and you will explore in that intercessory prayer the special needs they would have at that time. A new job. Do you know someone who is in need of a new job? Or someone who's just taken on a new job? And the special pressures that are associated with that job. Somebody who's just graduated from high school or college, and they stand on the threshold of a career or a very important turning point in their life. Do you remember back? This is where age and maturity can reap great dividends as you turn that experience into insight in praying in an intercessory way. That is one of the ways in which, as this proverb say, that the hoary head can be a glory to the Lord. Because that wisdom, just hindsight, can become the basis of praying for more effectively for those who are going to face the same things that you've been through. Or what about new seasons of the year as the occasion to intercede for somebody else? New seasons. New seasons like school season. We had all our young people stand up this morning. I hope you noticed them, and that you pray for them and remember the special needs they have in the schools that they attend. Five, the fifth way in which we seek to build an intercessory prayer ministry, is assemble with other believers who are engaged in intercession. Assemble with other believers who are engaged in intercession. And the immediate way in which you can assemble is in your own family. In your own family prayer. Are you praying for other people? Not only is that healthy praying, but that is going to have some dividends for your own children. As you become conscious of, and they become conscious of, needs that other people have. And it will help to keep us from becoming purely inverted. We're not careful, we can only be praying for our own immediate needs. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. But to teach your children to be sensitive to others by engaging in intercessory prayer. Our church family, that should be a way in which you would want to meet as you can to engage in intercessory prayer with one another. You hear requests given, and you engage together in this struggle of intercessory prayer as we meet together and pray. Sixthly, number six, request others to pray for you. Request others to pray for you in the special needs that you have or opportunities. Do not be reluctant to ask others to pray for you. There are some good examples of this. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. Paul was never embarrassed to lay out his prayer request. Request others to pray for you. You see, this will stimulate them in intercessory prayer. It puts a responsibility on them in the proper way. That's 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verses 1 through 3. Finally, brothers, pray for us that the message of the Lord may spread rapidly and be honored just as it was with you, and pray that we may be delivered from wicked and evil men, for not everyone has faith. 2 Corinthians 1:11, another example of this. Request others to pray for you. James 5:16, go to the leadership of the church with a specific need. Now listen, this is where I think the body can work together in a beautiful way to get an effective ministry carried out. If there is a matter that needs to be prayed for, and the leadership of the church has not thought about it, don't sit or leave and get puffy or get self-righteous and say, well, why didn't they think to pray about so-and-so? Do you realize that the very reason why you may have thought about that in the providence of God is so that you can help to stimulate others to pray about that? And whatever we can do to get this spectatorship idea of church out of our minds, that we come to be spectators and we're just going to see how they do. And if he didn't do this or they didn't do that, then, oh, that's bad. I'm not going to that church anymore because they did they. Who is they? The they is you. And the very thing that's come to your mind as a prayer, a need, prayer of intercession, that could be, you could be the strategic person in bringing that to the attention of others. No one man, no leaders are omniscient. We cannot remember everything. Now, we have prayer cards that are available for filling them out and identifying prayer requests. And we have means of specifying areas where prayer is needed. Take advantage of that. If you think, know of someone who needs prayer, mention that. That's very important. And don't be hesitant yourself to request prayer and to ask others to pray. I appreciate very much what someone did the other day. It was about a week or so ago. I got a call, and in the course of the conversation, they asked me this, and it was a refreshing kind of a call. It was, are there any areas for which we as a family can pray for you? And I really appreciated that because I could give them right about that time about three or four things, specific things. That, and I knew that that family was going to take those matters and pray. And I think that's a good kind of initiative to take. Is there something that I can pray for you about? And I mentioned 1, 2, 3. And I really appreciated that person asking me that. I didn't feel they were invading my privacy at all. Well, I could tell them what I wanted to. And I didn't have to tell them everything that's going on in my life. But let's please learn to not run from sharing needs in the name of privacy. Now, I know it can be, some people may abuse it, and they just might spill all the beans, so to speak, and just lay everything, hang all dirty laundry out. And sometimes there needs to be a judicious sort of judgment, a careful judgment. But let's not hide behind the principle of privacy and therefore never enter in any needs of others, asking others to pray for you, or asking, is there some area for which I can pray for you? 6, 7, keep your word when you promise to pray for others. Keep your word when you promise to pray for others. Probably the best way, one of the good ways to build in an intercessory response is try in as brief, as soon as you can after you have been asked to pray, to pray. As soon as you can. First quiet moment. Duck off somewhere. Get in a room. And this builds in a habit of prayer and responding rather than promising and breaking the promise. 8. Share answers to intercessory prayer with others. Share answers to intercessory prayer with others. 2 Corinthians 1:11. This is an encouragement. Now here, I guess we probably are at times afraid that to do this, it's going to sound like not a testimony, but a bragamony, and that we are bragging. Well, if the Lord gets the glory, so much the better. If it's bragging on Him, all right, so what? But it can surely be an encouragement. And that I think in my own life, one of the great stimulations to prayer is to have heard the account of another person's prayer and answer to that prayer. And there are certain prayers and answers that I've had that when I've shared them with other people, they have been an encouragement to other people. And intercessory prayer, the answers can be an encouragement for the rest of the life, your life. So don't be ashamed to share that with others. You surely examine your motives. If I can think, for instance, of an intercessory prayer as a new child in the faith that I engaged in, and I engaged in regularly in praying for a certain individual, I prayed for their salvation, and I would take time out at the beginning of the school day, not this person only, but some others, and over a period of time, God was working in some ways I didn't even know about till later. And God worked in answer to intercessory prayer, the salvation of someone who was one of my closest friends in high school. And that was an answer to intercessory. And it's encouraged me. And it's a rebuke to me when I fail to engage in intercessory prayer, because the Lord has a way of taking my mind back to that. Look what God has ordained. He has ordained the means as well as the end. And I prayed for Jim Nixon for weeks and weeks and weeks and months. And God saved him. And now there he is as a pastor of a sister church in Ohio. But little did I know back when I was praying for him at 15 or 16 that God would have a way of turning all this out to his ultimate glory. And that's both an encouragement to me and a rebuke. Who else is it for whom I should be praying intercessory prayers like that? Some unsaved person. So don't get into the or think that sharing of answers is going to be pretentious. Oh, it may be if you have the wrong motive, but it can be a great encouragement. 9, recognize the effectiveness of intercessory prayer. Recognize the effectiveness of intercessory prayer. It's a way of participating in a wider ministry. You can have a ministry that will not limit, you will not be limited by any geographical boundary in this kind of ministry. 2 Corinthians 1, verses 10 and 11. Paul says, He has delivered us, speaking of God, from such a deadly peril, and He will deliver us. On Him we have set our hope that He will continue to deliver us. As you help us by your prayers are going to help us. Then many will give thanks on our behalf for the gracious favor granted us in answer to the prayers of many. You are working with us, and then others will have praise to God. You have entered into this wider ministry. And you may not be able to make long travels. You may be confined to your routine day in and day out. But an intercessory ministry gives you unlimited possibilities in the effectiveness of your ministry. And I know that there are those who engage in this here in this church. And probably I will not fully know, and nor will you, how effective those prayers are and how probably as important as they are. I should increasingly learn to appreciate the importance of effective intercessory prayer. And it's not the kind of thing in these days of celebrityship in Christianity and statistics. It's not the kind of thing that you measure always. Most of the time it's not. And it's usually carried out in a very quiet, in a very humble way. But it's the most effective ministry. It's basic to everything else. It's what breaks the soil as God has ordained this means of intercessory prayer. Let's close in prayer. Lord, build into our lives this ministry of intercession. Build into our lives this sensitivity to the needs of one another. And our Father, that you will get increasing honor, greater glory, as we seek to become more effective praying on behalf of others. In the name of Christ, we request this. Amen.